Okay, so just to reiterate, today is Asara B'Teves, and it's important for us to be able to connect to the unique aspects of the day and the whole mandate of Taneisim in general, but specifically Asara B'Teves, which has unique properties to it, or at least unique theoretical properties, maybe unique actual properties, and to get a little bit of a sense of awareness of what it is we are setting aside our day in order to appreciate. So we'll start by taking a look at the Gemara on Daf Yud Ches and Rosh Hashanah, which gives us background about the specific Taneisim, but also does so in a context which tells us a lot about how we relate to the Taneisim B'Zman Hazeh. So who'd like to reach me a little bit? Let me start from the Mishnah here on Yud Ches and Aleph. Okay, yeah.
So those are 6 months when they send out messengers.
In other words, that it's especially important that there should be an awareness of the calendar for those months because of their ramifications of observance. What does the Gemara say about that?
The Likunami at Tammuz v'Tevet should also have sent them out on Tammuz and Tevet because of the vest. De Amar Rav Chana bar Bizna, Amar Rabbi Shimon Chasida. My dichtiv ko amar Hashem tzavakot, tzom revi'i, v'tzom ha-chamishi, v'tzom ha-shevi'i, v'tzom ha-asivi, yeh le-bet Yehuda le-sasom le-simcha. Why does it say that there's all these four tzomim?
What is the impact of that pasuk in Zechariah telling us about all these fast days that are somehow both fast days and celebrations at the same time?
Kar lehu tzom ve-kar lehu sasom le-simcha. Bizman sheyesh shalom yela sason simcha, and shalom tzom. So when there's peace, then it will be for sason simcha. When there's not, it will be a fast.
Okay, so what does shalom mean? Yeah, Shmuel.
I think at first, like without looking at anything, I would just think like stam, like just general peace, like nothing going on. But I think it means like there's a base of mikdash.
Okay, so what gives you that impression?
I mean later. I eat.
Ramban says that, but that's not what Rashi says.
Okay.
The Ramban says that, but I think that if that's what we hold, that makes this a stronger question.
Okay, what's the question?
Because if that's what we're saying that it's that Shalom is on the Bimkdash standing, it's clear that from the Mishnah, because it later mentions Bismach Bimkdash Kayam, that the Stam Mishnah is not when the Beit HaMikdash is standing. So if Shalom was when the Beit HaMikdash is standing, then that means that the Stam Mishnah is when there's no Shalom, so then you should be fasting, and we should send out messengers on those months.
Okay, interesting point. So what other possibilities do we have for what Shalom could mean then?
Yeah, Rashi seems to say it's when the nations aren't in control of what we're doing.
Or leaving us alone, basically.
Yeah.
So does that mean just autonomy? Does that mean it's a messianic era? Does that mean it's the definition of a messianic era? Does it require a base of Mikdash?
You said it's optional. Wasn't Mishnah unoptional?
Well, first we're talking about Shalom. What is the term Shalom?
Al's question, you were saying...
Oh, you went back to his previous point.
Yeah, he was saying when isn't Shalom, you don't fast these optional fasts.
Right.
Was he saying that on the optional fast? The Mishnah is not an optional fast, though.
So okay. What's the question? That.
Say
it again. Did I get it wrong? I'm not sure if I
said it wrong. Okay, so the Gemara is going to have a couple of associations here. But in any event, we see that there is a certain status when we have Shalom and a certain status when we don't. So if it's Gezeres HaMalchus, that's one thing. If it's Shalom, that's another thing. And there's an in-between status as well. And what does Shalom mean? So Rashi here just tells us it means She'ein Yad Ovdi Kachav Tekifel Yisrael. Other Rishonim say it a little differently. It sounds like it's something eschatological. I mean, it sounds like it's something associated with a future redemption. That we're probably not there yet. And maybe it's a little bit symbolic that we can't even agree on what Shalom means. That sounds a little bit depressing, at least in concept. The Ritva over here goes to a few other possibilities as well. But okay, so the Pasuk tells us two contradictory things. It's called a tzom, it's also called a celebration. So it was man she'ei shalom yilusas l'simcha. Ein shalom. So we continue from there.
Ein shalom tzom. Amar papa hachik amar bizman she'ei shalom yilusas l'simcha. Yesh gezer hamalchut tzom. Ein gezer hamalchut ve'ein shalom ratzu mitanin ratzu ein mitanin.
Okay, so that's very interesting. Right? So apparently there is a in-between kind of category. So we have three options. That either there is a situation of Shalom when these days will be celebrated. Rashi tells us, focusing on the Aser Behesped of Atinus, we're not allowed to fast. Not allowed to have Hesped either, because it's a day of celebration. But if there is a Gzeres HaMalchus, so then it is a Tzom, and it's an obligatory Tzom. Rashi seems to be emphasizing that by telling us, Chovo L'Sanis Behem. But if it's somewhere in between, so then, Ratzu Misanin, Ratzu Ein Misanin. And the Rashi fills in, so apparently that's the answer to the Gemara's question, that it was this in-between status, and therefore we don't have to send shluchim for that purpose. So, but the problem is, the Gemara Mishnah does mention Tisha B'Av as one of the candidates here. So to take it from there.
We should also be, it should also be a reshut, and then we should not send out shluchim. Amar Papa Sha'ani Tisha B'Av Hoyel Ve'Hoch Palu Bo Tzarot. Since it was like there was many layers of tzarot, basically.
So it's interesting. The question of how to translate Hoch Palu Bo is actually open to discussion, as you can see here, because Gemara sounds like it goes on to explain what it means. All right, so let's, if we hold off on the translation of Huchbulu for a moment and see how the Gemara explains why Tisha B'Av would have some kind of a greater intensity. So read further a little bit first. It's two things, right?
So both in Mikdash were destroyed, and Beitar was captured and plowed over.
Okay, so how does that explain why Tisha B'Av has greater intensity? So if you're going to, having that extra language, what does that tell you about how to translate Huch B'Lu Bo
Hataras? Imagine it's like doubled.
So doubled, how is it doubled?
Since it's doubled twice, and that there was both Bat Yamikdash, and then also Beitar was captured and plowed over on that day.
Okay. Shmuel, you have a comment on that? So, what's interesting is that this is really a Tisha B'Av topic, so I won't spend too much time on it, but there's a lot to understand about this. So, if you look at the Tosus over here, Tosus addresses that there is some challenge in how to translate this word exactly. See the Tosus? Top Tosus on the page?
Holy of the Huch Balu Bo Hatzarot, Beyom Shiva Asar Bet Hamuz, Nami Ira Hamisha Devarim, Kedetan Beperek Batra Detanit.
Right, this was Daf Yomi last week. So for anyone holding in Daf Yomi, here's a little synergy. This is Daf Yomi just a few days ago.
A So
hold on a second. So just what is Tosfos asking?
What's the implicit question? If it was just that there's many things that happen on that day, it should apply to Shiva Asar B'Tammuz also, because we know five things happened.
Okay, so basically the implicit question is that you could have thought Huchpalo means multiplied, that many bad things happened on Tisha B'Av, so it's worse. But if that's what it means, so then that is not sufficient to explain why Tisha B'Av should be separate, because the same could be said about Shavuos Batamas, last week's Daf Yomi, that it also was a day when many bad things happened. So that's the question part of Tosfos, and what's the answer? Okay, so basically Tosfos gives two answers, and there's a lot written about these two answers. They actually have some very interesting, significant implications as far as how to understand Tisha B'Av. Maybe we'll have time to come back to that point a little bit, but you see the difference between the two answers. Basically, Tosfos is giving us, together with the question, three ways to understand Huchpalo. Right? Huchpalo could just mean the quantity of tragedies. So a number of bad things happened. That could have been, that's the impression you get from the Gemara, because the Gemara says Tisha B'Av is different because Huchpalo Botzaris, and then, oh look, these three things happened. Problem is that that's not going to distinguish between Tisha B'Av and Shavuos Batamas, which also had multiple things happen. So therefore, we have to explain it some other ways. So Tosfos gives you two other ways to understand it. What's the first of the two ways?
It was just worse.
So qualitative. It's not a quantitative term, but it's a qualitative term. That huchpulu just means intensity. That the tsar that's associated with Tisha B'Av, specifically about the Churban HaBayis, is what is most significant. And therefore, so the part about Beitar would presumably just be a continuation of the sentence, but really, it's the Churban HaBayis that is being highlighted here. And the fact that that is especially significant because of its implications, and also a situation that still continues to affect us today. So that presumably plays a role here. Or another possible answer?
That one thing was doubled, so I'm assuming that means the destruction.
Yeah, so presumably the destruction of the Churban happening twice, so that's what we mean. So then Huchpalo should be translated specifically as repeated, as doubled or repeated. So basically three interpretations. Either it means multiple tragedies, a greater intensity to the tragedy, a qualitative interpretation, or it means specifically repetition. So this may give a lot of insight into what's special about Tisha B'Av. Maybe we'll come back to that point. If we had Shira in the summer, then we would talk about then. But although by then there'll be a Gula, so hopefully it won't be relevant. Okay, so, but in any event, these factors set aside Tisha B'Av. So Tisha B'Av is not subject to these distinctions.
What is the point of Beitar in the third answer? In the second answer, Tosfos?
So I think you'd have to say, really, according to both answers in Tosfos, they both focus on the Beis HaMikdash, that it's just a part of the sentence. As we often find in Shastas, that gives us ample room to have multiple interpretations, that the Gemara will often quote a statement, and the whole statement is there, and we're not always sure how much of it is relevant. So that gives us extra room to have additional interpretations, because there's always that room for question. Maybe a word is significant, maybe it isn't. So it sounds like, according to these interpretations, you'd have to say that it's really about the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to get into details that are important for us in terms of the specific Tanaisim, and especially because Asar B'Tevis is among them, so we want to see that as well. But just while we're here, so let's talk about the significance of what we've seen so far. So here you have the Gemara laying out in an effort to explain the Mishnah, but that's of less relevance to us, But the general question of how to relate to these Tanesim Bizman Hazeh. So what do you see from what the Gemara has told us about the Tanesim and their tokef today and their weight? Yeah?
Maybe just that Tanesim can't just jump. If they were just like a Zekar, what happened, then it would seem like they were just always, like, situation wouldn't be relevant.
Okay, so that's very interesting. So you're jumping right into the lumbus of it. So that's definitely something to keep in mind, right? So what exactly is the weight of a tainus nowadays? These, especially these historically associated tainusim, right? Clearly, these tainusim are different than Yom Kippur. Right? Yom Kippur has got its own character to it. Yom Kippur is the one that's min haTorah. These are clearly their own category, but these four tainusim that are associated with the Churban. So what is the role? So your observation that it seems to be more than just a Zecher, certainly important, and that's also something to come back to. But first of all, just in terms of practice, so the Gemara is telling us a few things, right? Just in terms of listing the lessons on the surface, that the Tanesim are not always applicable the same way, that there are three different levels: obligatory fast day, holiday, or in the middle, voluntary day. Very interesting. Tisha B'Av is distinct. And we also have a lot of open questions that come from this. So first of all, Shmuel's already alluding to, does this tell us anything about the nature of the fast days in terms of what they're supposed to accomplish? And maybe also suggests that the function changes depending on the time. You know, presumably there's a difference between the celebration days and the fast days. Maybe there's also a difference between the fast days and the voluntary fast days in terms of their character. Like, should we say that category, well, they're not really numbered here, but should we say that the Xayra situation and the in-between situation are basically the same, it's just about commitment? Or is there something more fundamental that distinguishes them? And Tisha B'Av, is Tisha B'Av completely removed from this category because of Huchblu Bo'atzaris? Or is it actually really part of this group, but just there is a chumrah that's tacked on afterwards, which is how some of the Rishonim understand. So some of the Rishonim, if you look at the Ritva, for example, will explain that really Tisha B'Av actually is not fundamentally separated from these other three. It's just that we, in practice, treat it with more chumrah because of these added aspects. So something to be aware of also in terms of the overall status of these Tanesim. So the Gemara continues. I didn't give you the whole Gemara to look at, but if you keep going on to Daf Yutessim at Aleph, so the Gemara introduces a term which has a lot of practical relevance to us, and that is the term Divrei Kabbalah. So Divrei Kabbalah is a different category, apparently, than either the Raisas or the Rabbanans. This is all a discussion here on Daf Yutessim and Aleph. And Divrei Kabbalah is not about mysticism. It means that it refers to something that we have through tradition. And in practice, what it refers to is Dinim Derabbanan, that really should be viewed as dinim derabbanan. They are not from the Torah itself, but they have a greater stature than other dinim derabbanan because they are in Scripture. So I'm using that word advisedly, meaning that they are in Pesukim, but not in Chumash. So they are in Nach. That which is in Chumash is generally a dinim in HaTorah. But that which is man-made, so that would have to be drabanan. But if it's mentioned in psukim, so then that gives it this higher status of divrei kabbalah. So divrei kabbalah refers to a number of concepts that would fit that description. So, for example, the four primary obligations of Purim are probably in this category because they're all referenced in the psukim in the end of the ninth parak of Megillas Esther. And these tanesim we just saw are referenced in the pasuk in Zechariah. All right, so therefore, these obligations, the fast days and Purim and a few other things, Covenant Onik Shabbos is probably in this category also because those are sourced in the pasuk in Yeshayo. So concepts such as these are called Divrei Kabbalah. Hi.
Just thinking back, and obviously we didn't get this deep, but I remember like you gave a shiur during the lunch break about like rabbinic authority.
Mm-hmm.
Why does, it might not be the scope of it, but why it seems intuitive that like if it's in Nach, then it should be more, but like why is that relevant to like the power of, I mean, both are dinim derabanan.
Correct. So really they should be dinim derabanan. And it's a question how much of a difference it makes. So, those of you who are using actual Gemaras, so if you look on your Tessimut Aleph, there's one line here in the Gemara that it's a question how far to go with it. That where the Gemara talks about Divrei Kabbalah, there's a line here right smack in the middle of your Tessimut Aleph, where the Gemara says, Divrei Kabbalah ki Divrei Torah Damo. Divrei Kabbalah are comparable to Divrei Torah. So, in the context of this Gemara, it's a very specific context. It's only saying for one specific purpose here. That the Gemara is talking about the fact that dinim derabbanan need a little bit more support than dinim deraisa because people take them less seriously. So, deraisas do not need chizik, derabbanan do. So, in that context, the Gemara says, it's first said, Ein divrei Torah tzrichim chizik, or well, divrei sofrim tzrichim chizik. So, making that distinction, so then the Gemara says, but divrei Kabbalah, so like divrei Torah for that purpose. So, if that's all it means, so then that would address Shmuel's question, that which is known from Psukim, even if they're not Psukim and Chumash itself, but they're known from the Megillus, they're known from the Nevi'im, so that presumably people take more seriously. So if that's all it means, and that's all the Gemara says, so then that we could understand. Now, la halacha, it's taken to mean more than that. Mostly because, if it could be a little like, historical about it, because of the influence of the Shagas Aryeh. So the Shagas Aryeh is a classical sefer. Shagas Aryeh lived in the late 1600s. The Vilna Gaon was a young man. He met him when the Shagas Aryeh was an old man. The Vilna Gaon was born in 1720. So Shagas Aryeh lived around then. So the Shagas Aryeh, his sefer by that title, is a very important classic Achronisha sefer of essays. Officially it's called Shalos and Tshuvas, but it's not really questions that were asked to him. It's his halachic explorations. But he also wrote Svarim on a few Masechtas. So he has two Svarim that are each on three Masechtas. So one Sefer is called Gvura Sari. It's on Yuma and Tainus and on Makos. But he's got another Sefer, which people who are learning Daf Yomi now will have a lot of use from. Sefer Turi Evin. So the Turi Evin, which is on Rosh Hashanah and Megillah and Chagigah, so very much for the Daf Yomi around now, so that's a very influential Sefer as well. So in the Turi Evin, it happens to actually be in the Turi Evin to Megillah and Daf Hei. So the Turi Evin, the author of the Shagas Aryeh, in that Sefer adopts the position that Divrei Kabbalah Kedivrei Torah Dami means, for all intents and purposes, that essentially we treat Divrei Kabbalah L'chumra. So we have to be stringent when it comes to Divrei Kabbalah, and you'll find, so for example, in Hilchos Purim, and we'll talk about it then, that the poskim very often treat Shilas and Megillah and Shalach Manas l'chumrah because of this assumption that divrei Kabbalah k'divrei Torah Adam. Now, did everyone agree with this? Very possibly not. You can bring rayas from Rishonim that they weren't assuming this way, that they were not treating divrei Kabbalah on the severity of dinim d'oraisa. But as I was alluding to, the Turyevin's position was very influential, and I think it's fair to say that the Achronim, who came later, that seems to be the prevalent attitude that you find in the Svarim of Psak, of the later Svarim, that they treat Divrei Kabbalah as Divrei Torah L'chumra. So it has that significant halachic implication. From the Gemara itself, it's arguable, and there you could bring rayas from Rishonim that they weren't necessarily working under that assumption. But this is the current state of how we relate to the concept. Hi.
I just wanted to further clarify exactly the definition of Divrei Kabbalah versus Divrei Rabbanan. What exactly?
So there could be some gray areas, but for the most part, it'll be Dinim D'Rabbanan. They're not. We don't believe they came from God directly, right? They came from human beings, so they should really be treated like Dinim D'Rabbanan. But they made it into Tanakh itself.
Like we see references to them in Tanakh.
Right. So there are some gray areas. There are some who suggest that the pasuk in Tehillim, Bakei Shalom V'Radfehu, that constitutes a mitzvah sosei medivrei Kabbalah. And then there are two different possibilities. Either that's about seeking Shalom as a mitzvah, or some understand it to be that greeting people is a mitzvah because of Bakei Shalom V'Radfehu, a mitzvah medivrei Kabbalah. So there are a couple of additional possibilities and some gray areas, but those are good candidates. Let's say the four mitzvahs of Purim, the Tanesim, and Kavod V'Onik Shabbos all seem to be good examples of Divrei Kabbalah. So the question is that how does this Gemara affect that status? So the idea that the fast days may flip between obligatory and not, so does that affect their status vis-a-vis being Divrei Kabbalah or not? So that's an important question, and I wanted to do more of this Gemara because it's also going to talk about Asar B'Teve specifically, but before moving away from this first part, so there is a very important statement of the Ramban. So the Ramban wrote this comment in his Sefer Taras HaAdam. The Taras HaAdam is a Sefer that the Ramban wrote where he talks about Avelos and Pikur Cholim, and things surrounding Avelos, and he talks about private Avelos and public Avelos. So in that context, he talks about the Tanaisim. And what the Ramban wrote in those areas of Halacha and that Sefer had a big influence on Psak as well. So it was quoted in many of the Svarim that established codified Halacha afterwards. So here he has an important comment, which some argue with, but it's important to appreciate its significance. So I think you sent this around, Shmuel, the bottom of Dalet Amud Beis B'Dapei Harif.
I think so.
I think so. I was on the list.
The Amrinon?
Yeah, the Amrinon.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, so somebody want to read from there? Any volunteers? Two? Possible, okay, your own? The previous comment, he's just bringing the Gemara and commenting on it in a more pshat sense. But pick up from Vidamrinan.
Vidamrinan hacha dahani shartzam haspar mitishabab beratzutalia v'stavra dafilu hurgu lisanos lo amrinan desha vinu alayhu chova. So I guess that which we've mentioned thus far for all the other fasts except for Tishabab, they're, I guess, dependent on whether you want to fast for them or not, that even if you regularly fast them, we don't say that it's
that it's considered a chov, that it's the Lord of Shos.
Right, which is itself an interesting statement. One could have easily thought differently. And especially talking the plural, so it's not just saying that you took upon yourself this, but even though Klal Yisrael took upon this, it doesn't mean that it's become an actual chiyuv. Daha midakshina.
Daha midakshina, the late book, Nami at Tamuz Bateves, because since we asked the Gemara what about Tamuz Bateves, Mashma, and implies Shahurguli, Sanos Baham, that it was normal to fast for them. But Filuachi, Maskin, and the Ratsu, and the Sana. And we still say, though, that if you want, if you don't want to, you don't have to fast.
Right, so the context of the Gemara was that they were in the practice of doing this. Clearly, they were fasting on these days, or else they wouldn't have had the reason to ask the question. And still, we have this assumption that it's still considered to be Ratzu.
The legal
Maimar,
the Kibbutz Meikar of the Ratzu Talimosa, Afagav, the Hashtag, Ablenu, Chova, Loch, Amiri, Kuluhai. The leipku shluchim alayim, that, and don't say that since originally it was dependent on whether they wanted or not, even though they accepted upon themselves as a chovo, we're not like as machmir about this, because if we were, then we'd send out shluchim for this also.
Yeah, basically he's explaining how the whole back and forth in the Gemara would go, because he says he just used the Gemara to establish that even when it was in practice to fast on these days, it still wasn't a chiyuv, because the Gemara's premise was that it was happening, and still the decision was we don't have to send out shluchim because it's voluntary. So apparently, even though it's practice, it still continues to be voluntary. So he's writing here, but maybe you think there's an in-between answer, because maybe we accepted it as a practice, but it's on a lower level. So if it's a lower level, that's not enough to send out shluchim for. So the lo de chamira kuli hay de lisku shluchim alayim.
Right. Because if it was a chov, I wouldn't send out shluchim.
Ela vadek. So it must be like we said that it's not a chiyuv.
Lepize ha'idna. So according to this, and nowadays hanach zomus bar mitishvah beratzu talu. So then it would seem that nowadays all these fasts except for Tisha B'Av are dependent on whether you want to fast or not. Elava, except for the fact that there are bond rights,
that's the sefer we were talking about, the Ramban in that sefer, Torah Sa'adam.
The Ratzu Rov Yisrael v'hiskimu shulo lisanus ke'amrinan she'ein based matrichim alim lisanus, that if most of Klal Yisrael agreed that they didn't want to fast, as we said earlier, that based on wouldn't be matriach to make them fast. V'achshav v'neu kfar ratzu v'nagu lisanus, that we've accepted upon ourselves, are accustomed to fast. V'fichach, therefore, aser liyachil lifrutz gedjam, that it's aser for a single person or for anyone to, I guess, break down this gedder or this accepted practice.
Right, so basically it's he's saying we're coming at it from a different direction. It's a subtle distinction that we don't say that we created a chiyuv just because we're doing it, but Lamaisa, Klal Yisrael is all unified in this, and to decide you're not going to be a part of it, so that's Peretz Geder. So that is breaking the fence, and that is not appropriate to do, to put it mildly.
The culture came to Doris Halal, certainly for, I guess, our generations. Shari Bavano Senu Sharabi Yesh Gzeira Be Yisrael, Vein Shalom, that we have a lot of sins, and there's a Gzeira on Klal Yisrael, Vein Shalom, there's no real peace. Haka Chayavan Hakoli Sanus Medibre Kabbalah, the Takanus Medin. Therefore, everyone is Chayav to fast based off the Psukim and because of the
Takanas. Okay, so that's pretty significant also, right? It raises the question of what exactly is our status today. So are we in a situation, Xeris HaMalchus, are we in a situation of Twilight Zone? And, you know, presumably also that could change from one door to the next. You know, so for any Rishon, for example, to establish it one way or another, and for that to be the halacha forever, is probably going to be very dependent on what's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to believe or to imagine that all tkufos from the time of the Gemara till now are all under the same heading, or that every place in the world is under the same heading. Probably also a factor. But now the Ran continues to go on and say some pretty significant chidushim from the Ramban based on this premise. So keep reading.
Because of all the Medina Kulu Dalet Somos Asurim Berechitza Uvesicha Benilas Asando Vitashu Shemita Umafsikim Bahem Liba Odiom Kitishiba.
Okay, so that's very much at odds with what we know, right? Right, so we're familiar with, well, we didn't start the fast last night, right? So we're grateful that the Sar Batavis is in the short winter days, but that's only significant because we're only fasting during the daytime. If it was treated like Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur, we would have started already last night at 4 something. So we'd already be even hungrier by now. But for whatever reason, we treat these Tanesim differently. And we only fast during the daytime. And also, we only have really what's one of the 5 Inuyim. We only abstain from eating and drinking, which is one of the 5 Inuyim. And we don't have the whole package that is prohibited on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. So, the Ramban tells a big chiddush here. That really, all these fast days should have the whole set. So all the Inuyim they list, Mafsikim Hemibod Yom, meaning we should start the previous night. So there should be 25-hour fast days of the 5 Inuyim. Dilo Gara
Gzeras Neviim Migzeras Based In, because the Gzeras Neviim is no worse than Gzeras Based In.
Yeah, so for those of you who may have been learning Daf Yomi over the past weeks, so you see that they made all kinds of potential tanyos for crisis situations, would have all those rules, right? So why should those be more chomer than the tanyos of the Nevi'im, Gasar B'Tevis and Shvasa B'Tamas?
Oh, the whole the Tikkun Neviim, Kein
D'Oraisa.
That would be, I guess, Takana. Kein D'Oraisa, Takana. Neviim is Kein D'Oraisa,
Tikkun. Right, so presumably the model of a fast day is what we have in the Torah. So what does the Torah convey as a fast day? Yom Kippur, right? Yeah?
Is that, the last one seems like, maybe it's like knowing the end result or whatever, but a little bit, but like the types of fasts are seem so different that why would it be established after Yom Kippur? Like,
well,
what we're doing seems very different than what we're doing.
So that's something we certainly would want to explore. We don't know that yet, though. But, you know, to say they're fundamentally different in a whole conceptual category in and of itself is interesting. We have to establish that that's true. But what he's initially assuming here is that a fast day in the Torah is one specific thing. So if we're going to make fast days, so presumably we look to the Torah for what the fast days are. And that's what they are. So it should be 5 Inuyim, 25 hours long. So that they would have made these 4 fast days like Yom Kippur for the purposes of Inuy. The family God beat some Esther, Amru, Bebedrish, Tehillim, Mitsum, Alay, Shalosh, Hashem, Lal, Viyom. So, Efshal, Adam, Asus, Cain, Elish, Hayim, Afsi. So, a person is able to fast for 3 full days like that. Shem, Afsi, Kim, Ebod, Yom. Vitosefta, Mesach, Tainis, Tanya, Kol, Elish, Amru, Ochlam, Bishos, Yom, Asur, Malach, Rechitza, Menayin, Shayom, Halach, Achar, Alay, just to get a little bit here. Shalom. Just rushing this a little bit so we get a little further, but bringing these proofs that they should all be treated the same. So basically, he's trying to establish that really a fast day, they're all the same. These watered down fast days that we have doesn't really exist as a halachic concept. That a fast day has a prohibition of rechitza, as he brought from all those proofs, and should be 24 hours long, etc., etc. So that's what a fast day is. So he just, the last three words here, he says, so what's the whole issue? He says, the difference is, Tishara Baratsu Talu, that because we are able to relate to these fast days as voluntary, that's where they get their leniency from. Okay, so now, sorry, I want to take over again your own from Hayidna?
Yeah, sure. So nowadays, Kevan, Shinagul, Isanus, Lonagul, Lachumras, Halalu, Marshman, the May Karakak, Ratzul, Isanus, Bovar, about Loratzul, and Agboson, Hamuros. So nowadays, since we bask, but we're not really mocking for all these chumras that we just listed, it implies that originally when we took it on, we really only took on only wanting to fast, but not to take on all these additional chumras. We came into Hani Baratsu Talu, and that since these are, I guess, dependent on whether we want to or not, our Shus Biyadan, that our Shus in our hands of all may. Ikur takana vada isur mukum, but really based off of like the actual takana, all these things should be aser and they should be like tishba.
Okay, so very big chiddush what the Ran is telling us here.
Was this all just the Ran, or was the Ran quoting the Ramban?
This is all from the Ramban.
So yeah. It's all from the Ramban, but the Ran
yeah.
is quoting.
Yeah. So this is a big chiddush here, though. What he's essentially establishing is that the fast days, really in their original form, were meant to be treated like Tisha B'Av is treated, and that is the pattern. That's what a fast day min haTorah is, and that's the only thing we know from. So why do we have a different format today, where today, literally, we are fasting only during the daytime, and there's no prohibition of rechitza. It's only eating and drinking that is prohibited. So that is all because of this ratzu factor. That was a decision, and Klal Yisrael said, okay, we are willing to enter into something we're not obligated to do. But because of that, we also can define the parameters. So we'll create a new concept that was not the original vision of Chazal. That's what we are willing to take on. And Tisha B'Av, that's different because of Huch Bulu Ba'atzaris. And as mentioned before, so some of the Rishonim understand that it's only different as a second thought. So really, it's also Ratzu. They're all together. But because of Tisha B'Av's additional significance, so then we decided not to treat it as voluntary. So that could have some major implications, because if we assume that the Tanaisim were originally coming from the Pasuk, so this is originally the Divrei Kabbalah. So nowadays, maybe it's not coming to Divrei Kabbalah, that the Pasuk does not obligate us to fast in our current state. So then what we're doing is coming from a different level. Let's call it Drabanan. So Tisha B'Av, if that stays with its original format, that itself might be a Din Drabanan. That may still not be considered Divrei Kabbalah, because that's something that has to be figured out. Does Ratzu apply to Tisha B'Av also? Just we're Machmir after the fact because of the extra Tzaras? Or was Tisha B'Av never treated differently? So that's a little bit of a discussion. Hi.
So I'm a little confused. From the Ramban, are we doing like a fast day light, or are we creating our new thing?
So that is open for discussion, if that's what you were alluding to before. So some of the Achronim suggest, and it does sound that way, that it means we are basically creating a new thing, that we're relating to these days fundamentally differently. And that Tisha B'Av is its own story. Now, there are those who disagree with the Ramban. So, for example, if you look at the Netziv and his commentary to the She'iltos, and one of the Netziv's most important Svarim, Netziv wrote many, many Svarim, all amazing. But he wrote a Sefer that was a commentary to the She'iltos to Rav Achai Gaon. Rav Achai was one of the later Gaonim. He lived in the 900s. And he wrote a Sefer, I believe, for his son, and that he should have Torah organized in a concise format. And so he came to She'iltos. And the Netziv wrote a commentary to that, which is very often quoted and very significant. So the Netziv in that commentary, so he takes issue with this Ramban. And he believes that if you look elsewhere in Tanakh, you can find that there always was such a notion of a partial day fast and of a lower level observance of a fast. And he thinks that Asar B'Teves was always meant to be the way that it is now. And that Tisha B'Av, it's different. It's not like the Ramban seems to be suggesting that we left it as the default, but rather it is intensified. And that's what Hukbulu Bohatzaris does. It intensifies Tisha B'Av beyond its baseline. Okay, but in any event, so this is an important perspective on how to relate to the Tanisim today, and leaves open a lot of questions as to what to do with that. Also, rests on the premise that we really are in a in-between state. It would seem that there should be tkufos, or that there have been tkufos. It's certainly hard to say that from the time of the Beis Hamikdash till now, Klal Yisrael was never in a category of Gzeres HaMalchus. There certainly have been times when, if that's not Gzeres HaMalchus, when is? If the Holocaust wasn't Gzeres HaMalchus, so when is? So it's a good question. According to the Ramban's premise, presumably the fast days should be obligatory then. And if they're obligatory, they should be treated, shitaso, like Tisha B'Av. So there are some discussions of that, and it sounds like Magen Avraham talks about this, says maybe a Baal Nefesh should be Machmir. I don't know how much we find this was actually put into practice. Perhaps it's a consequence of the fact that the situations that we relate to as Gzeres HaMalchus are also, by definition, kind of high crisis situations where maybe it was difficult to have much of a fast to begin with. So, as far as there being a record of Asar B'Teves and the like being treated as a more chamer day, it's a little bit open. But as far as we know, we don't really have that practice of treating these fast days differently depending on the situation vis-a-vis Gzeres HaMalchus. So, how much the Ramban is accepted as a premise, the halacha, is a little bit of an open question. But before going further, so now with that background, so let's look specifically at Asar B'Teves. So, in the interest of time, let's just look at that one part of the Gemara. Who wants to read back in the Gemara for us, back on Yuches and Beis? The whole page is relevant, but let's just focus specifically on the Asar B'Teves reference, so we'll get that in. Yeah, you're on.
Do you mind just clarifying what the Ramban says about Tisha B'Av exactly in terms of like the original form?
It sounds like if we were to, let's say if we wanted to discuss Tisha B'Av primarily, we wanted to know why is Tisha B'Av observed differently than the other three Tanisim in its group? Why is it observed differently than Asar B'Teves and Som Gedalia and Shavasu V'Tamas? It has the five Inuyim and it has 25 hours. So it sounds like from the Ramban that Tisha B'Av is just the default. That's what a fast is, Ben HaTorah. And Tisha B'Av is just following that template. And the real deviation is today, is Asar B'Teves. So that's the question. Not why is Tisha B'Av intensified? Why is Asar B'Teves watered down? So the answer is, it's watered down because it's in this category of Ratzu. So because it's voluntary, so really we could be not fasting at all. But Klal Yisrael did decide to take on this fast day. So once they were doing it voluntarily, they said, okay, this is how far we're ready to go. So it comes out that Tisha B'Av is the default. According to the Netziv and others, say that no, it's the other way around, that Tisha B'Av is not the default, Tisha B'Av is enhanced. That it could be that there is such a thing from Tanakh as a daytime-only tainus with only one inui. And it is possible, the Netziv says, that Asar B'Teves was never more than it's observed today. And that Tisha B'Av is distinct because it was enhanced, because it was intensified. Okay, but with that, so let's zero in on Asar B'Teves. So, does anybody want to read the Gemara, which talks about that for a few lines? Som HaTziri, it starts in the middle of the fourth wide line here on Yerches Mebez. Any volunteers? Okay, Al.
So my series Asar B'Teves, Shabu Samach Melech Bavel Yerushalayim Shneimar Vayhi Devar Hashem Elai.
All right. So first of all, just before we get to the pasuk here in Yechezkel. But what happened on Asar B'Teves according to the Gemara?
The siege of the Melech Bavel Yerushalayim began.
So it begins. That's where Rashi writes Hischil Latzur Elah. So this word of Samach is interesting. It's a little bit ambiguous and might be significant for us, but there's a tiny bit of synergy, right? Because where do we know the word samach from?
The latest Mishnah,
right? Our recent Mishnah, samach alav kosel. Right? If Shimon put up his own wall, so there we know. Does it mean that he actually leaned it against it, or that he made which we know somech? You're actually supporting against something. You're actually leaning up on it. Or does it mean that you are simply close to something, or adjacent to it? So what that word means is actually going to be important. But for now, okay, so the king of Bavel came up to the city, came close to the city. He was leaning on it, Shenamar.
Ben Adam, Ketav Lecha et Shem Hayom, et Etzem Hayom Hazeh, Samach Melech Bavel, Yerushalayim.
Okay.
So
that pasuk, as we'll see in a moment, is going to be especially significant.
Ve'amai kari le'asiri, asiri l'chadashim. Ve'alo ya'arari ze l'chdo rishon. Rishon was asking a question on
because historically,
because that happened first,
right?
Obviously, before the other fast days.
Mm-hmm.
So why was it written that way? Because it was saying the months in their order.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the 5th of Tevet, and that's when the news arrived in the exile. Shehuchta, not sure.
That it was hit. That it was struck.
That year was that the city was struck. Shneimar, ויהי בשתי עשרה שנה, ועשירי בחמישה לחודש לגלותנו, בא אליי הפליט מירושלים, למור הוכתה העיר.
Okay, so that's that, and then that's when they heard about it.
So we make the day of the news like the day of the burning.
Okay, so let's stop here. So far, Gemara is telling us this one sentence about Asar B'Teves, because that's what we're assuming is the fast of this month. So what happened? Bo Samach Melech Bavel Al Ha'ir. So, and in telling us this, the Gemara quotes this pasuk in Yechezkel. Now, if you had a chance to see, so the Beis Yosef quotes the Abba Draon as telling us a big, at least theoretical, chiddush based on this pasuk. What was that?
We would not push it off for Shabbat.
Yes. Right? So that's quite a significant statement. Because essentially, that would make Asar B'Teves, in a sense, one practical sense, more chomer than Tisha B'Av and Shavuot B'Tamuz. Because those, as we know from practice, those regularly fall out on Shabbos. Pretty often they fall out on Shabbos. And we push them off until Sunday. So Sunday is half of the possibilities for those days, because everything can only happen on the four different days of the week. And Shavuot B'Tamuz, Tisha B'Av is always the same day. So they, half the time, are going to fall out. Half the possibilities are Sunday, because it's either actually Sunday, or more often, it's Shabbos, and push off until Sunday. So here, this big chiddush, the Beis Yosef quotes, that if Asar B'Teves were to fall out on Shabbos, we wouldn't be able to push it off. And that's an idea that he quotes from the Abba Draon. The Abba Draon is telling us this based on the language of this pasuk in Yechezkel that the Gemara is quoting. Of Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, of this day in and of itself. So that's very significant. And it's a pretty big chiddush. To a certain extent, it's a theoretical chiddush. Why would I call it a theoretical chiddush? Sorry?
Calendarily. Happen.
Correct. It doesn't happen on our calendar. So that makes it mostly theoretical. Now, it's not without impact, because it does play out in an unusual way. And we saw this last year when we had basically every possible calendaric quirk. So this was one of them. But what does happen occasionally is that Asar B'Teves falls out on a Friday. And we normally don't have fast days on Fridays. Usually we don't want to have a fast day on Fridays, because that's going to impact on how we enter Shabbos. So that's unusual, and it seems like that is a reflection of the fact that there is some particular significance to Asar B'Teves being attached to its day. So that's very interesting. So there is some impact of this position of the Abba Draon. Would it still be true that if it actually fell out on Shabbos, if our calendars would allow it, that we would fast on Shabbos, that we would fast for Asar B'Teves on Shabbos, what we wouldn't do for Tisha B'Av or Shavuot B'Tamuz? Seems a little surprising. There are some who read this Abba Draon to say that doesn't actually mean you fast on Shabbos. It means that we wouldn't replace it. That Tisha B'Av we move, Shavuot B'Tamuz we move, But the actual language is, we wouldn't be able to push it off to the next day. Maybe we would just cancel it. Which is a possibility. But again, in practice, we don't actually see this happening, so we don't have a sock on this. But how would you relate to this idea, even just potentially? Right? The notion of fasting on Shabbos for Shabbos of Batamas. What do you think about that? How could you explain that? So yes, it's being tied to a pasuk. The Beis Yosef raises the question, even after quoting this, Minayim Lozer, where does he get this from? And as the Menchas Elazar points out in the Tshuva, he said, yeah, he quotes the pasuk, but normally we don't make our own drushes. Normally the dinim that are derived from Sukkim, we have them from Chazal. So to make such a statement that there is a significant impact on halachic practice because of a diuk in the pasuk, that's a big chiddush. So how could you relate to that? So over the next few minutes, I'll tell you some clues that basically, I don't know if we have one theory to explain this, but we can put together a few parts. We can put together a few details which may all contribute to there being a difference here. So, first of all, as some point out based on the Menchas Chinuch, that the Menchas Chinuch raises the question, so why is it so obvious that Tisha B'Av should not be observed on Shabbos? Or that Shavuos B'Tamuz should not be observed on Shabbos? So to assume that Shabbos and the mitzvah to eat, the chiyuv to eat on Shabbos, is the clear victor in such a clash, how do you know? Now, what's the authority of eating on Shabbos? Is that a din min haTorah?
It's also Kabbalah.
So it seems like it's midivrei Kabbalah, as we were alluding to before. Now, there is some murkiness on this, and some of the Rishonim, as we'll mention in another minute, some of the Rishonim actually do have this language of a chiyuv daraisa to eat on Shabbos. There's a lot to try to figure out about that. But let's assume the Menchas Chinuch's premise is that there is a chiyuv midivrei Kabbalah to eat on Shabbos. So where do the fasts come from?
Awesome
midivrei Kabbalah. Now, if we assume that they are still midivrei Kabbalah,
don't we have asidoch lo tesfeh?
So that's a good question whether that fits this model or not, whether this is considered like a mitzvah sasei, a mitzvah lo sasei. Could say that each one has got its own unique properties to it. But what the Menchas Chinuch sets forward as far as addressing this question could be relevant here, as some of the later Sfarim, Menchas Chinuch didn't live so long ago, but some of the Sfarim since then build on this Menchas Chinuch to suggest that the Divrei Kabbalah, says the Menchas Chinuch, of the fast days, does not actually tell us that we have to fast on the 17th of Tammuz, or the 9th of Av. Right? We see his machlokas, it's also true, and what does the machlokas reflect? That the pasuk does not say a date. The pasuk tells us about months. So the fact that there is a fast in Av, or in Tammuz, so that much, okay, that's Divrei Kabbalah. The fact that there's a fast in Teves, that's Divrei Kabbalah. But what day it's going to be within the month, the Divrei Kabbalah does not require that. So therefore, says the Menchas Chinuch, it makes sense that Tisha B'Av, Shavuos B'Tamuz, should step aside and be observed on Sunday, because that would allow both for the Divrei Kabbalah to be fulfilled, because it only talks about the month and not about the date, and also the obligation of eating on Shabbos. So that could be one part of the puzzle, because then what you could go further and note is that okay? So as far as Shavasu Batamas, Tisha B'Av, and Tzom Gedalia, which also often gets pushed off, so there you have the latitude to go anywhere within the month. But in the context of Asara B'Teves, it's Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Now the Pasuk in Yechezkel supplements the picture. The date itself that it happened on has its own chashivas, and therefore that one's not going to budge. The other three, they can and do move, but Asara B'Teves, maybe based on that, doesn't move. That's one part of the puzzle. Another part of the puzzle, perhaps, is established by Reb Chaim Brisker. So you have to, if you have a appreciation for the whole Brisker canon, so you'll know that Svarim of Chaim are on different levels in terms of what's canonized and what degree. So the Sefer of Reb Chaim is the Sefer on the Rambam. It's the Chiddush Rebbeinu Chaim Halevi on the Rambam. So nowadays there's additional Svarim that have been published from manuscripts and from students. Probably the second level is called Chiddush HaGrach al Hashas. So there are Chiddushim of Reb Chaim on Gemaras, which used to be called the stencils because they're published in a very kind of informal format where it looks like it came off of somebody's old-fashioned computer. So in that Sefer, Chiddush HaGrach al Hashas, he has a very short comment about this position. And for some reason, it attributes the view of the upper drum, it attributes it to the Bahag. I don't know if there are other sources that have this from the Bahag, but he quotes this Bahag, that we would not be able to move Asara B'Teves away from Shabbos. And to contribute to the explanation, he notes that there are different types of fast days. And some of them are more incompatible with Shabbos than others. That if you have a fast day that's really all about being miserable and all about the avelos, so then that is really incompatible with Shabbos. But some fast days are really more directed to tshuva. And tshuva is not so incompatible with Shabbos. It's not a perfect match, but a tainus that's motivated by tshuva could be more compatible with Shabbos than a different type. So that principle you can derive, if you recall, we spoke about this a few months ago, when it was the Rosh Hashanah time, and we talked about the position of potentially fasting on Rosh Hashanah. Is there any kind of way to explain that? And we discussed that in the Gemara Maseches Tainis, that talks about a Tainis Chalom, that if somebody has a bad dream, and they're afraid that the bad dream is indicative of something, so then they are advised to fast on Shabbos, in order to try to mitigate the impact of the bad dream. So there again, it's not perfect. The Gemara says that you should still fast later to atone for the fast that you did on Shabbos, but still, that's the plan, to fast on Shabbos. So, what can you see from there? It says that a fast that's for the purpose of tshuva, that is not completely incompatible with Shabbos. Maybe not perfect for Shabbos, but we could imagine a act of tshuva in the form of a fast happening on Shabbos itself. So that also, again, we can put into the mix here as a part of it. Another clue, by the way, so I referenced the fact before that eating on Shabbos, you might call it Dibur Kabbalah, you might call it something else. So the Mabit, Yor Samech talks about this Mabit, that Mabit understands that the Chi of Daraisa, such as it is, to not fast on Shabbos, refers to a complete day fast from the nighttime till the next night. So that being the case, Asara B'Teves, assuming that it's only a daytime fast, were it to happen on Shabbos, would not be as big a contradiction to Shabbos as Tisha B'Av would be. Now, other things you could say that about also, but it's a partial explanation. It's just, again, little pieces of the puzzle that come together. So here, you're talking about a partial day fast, one that is uniquely wedded to the date itself, and also one maybe that is more about tshuva than other days are. So is Max then your own?
Does Rav Chaim express the differentiation between the different fast days as to why some would be qualified as tshuva?
No, he says it's very short. If you go look it up, you can find the Beis Medrash. It's about three lines. And he does, you know, it's supposed to say, well, all of these are little parts of the puzzle without really explaining more. And the truth is we're going to run out of time, so I'll have to just try to say quickly, but to give you a little bit more of a taste of the whole thing here. So, what about Max's question? You had a separate question?
Yeah, within the Ma'a bit, so what about...
Shabbos or Batamas?
Yeah, what about the other...
Right, that's what I'm saying as well, parts of the puzzle that, you know, theoretically you could say, or Tom Gedalia maybe would have tolerated it. So I think you have to combine all these approaches together and use them to get some clarity on this issue. So, as Max was beginning to point to, so why should Asara B'Teves have more of a tshuva character to it than other things? So one possible approach, and there's a long essay about this in the Sefer Tiferes Torah, which is a collection of the Chidushim of Rav Shimshon Pinkus, who may be a familiar name more for his Machshava. He's very well known for his Shiurim on Machshava, both written Sfarim and tapes. Unfortunately, he was tragically killed in a car accident, actually, some time ago. But there are Shiurim of his Lumdus that are recorded in the Sefer Tiferes Torah. So there he talks about this as well. And maybe you think about it for a second, maybe you can figure it out. Why would there be a difference in terms of the nature of the day between, let's say, Asara B'Teves and Tisha B'Av, in addition to the language of Etzem Yom Hazeh, and it was handed up first, a little smaller than now.
I was going to say, just if you look at the Gemara, specifically the opinion that men even seem to take it a step further, where you don't even do it on a 7 days, you do it on the fifth. Mm-hmm. Kind of hearing that, it seems it's a lot less about the time, the what actually happened, more about the process of what's of what's happening, and therefore
okay.
That might invoke tshuva, where the other fast days are really more about like what happened on Tisha B'Av was terrible. Right?
Okay, so that you're on the right track here. I'm not going to necessarily be mesachis to what you said about the other opinion of the Gemara, because I don't know if that necessarily helps. But let's be dealing with the Asara B'Teves itself. Al,
in the Asara B'Teves, there wasn't actually any destruction. It was the looming destruction.
Okay, right. So it's the same kind of point, focusing a different aspect. So here to go to our Baba Basra synergy, right? So I guess we can really stretch the synergy, right? So what was the Machayev of Shimon to pay for his part of the wall? All he did was he was Samech, right? That he put something adjacent, and that declared his intent that he's going to do more, and that triggered it, right? How's this for a stretch of the synergy, right? So here, Bo Samach Melech Bavel. So the king came close. But what if he had turned around at that point? So that wouldn't have meant anything. So the other fast days, something bad actually happened. Here, like you're saying, even though you were coming from the direction, but like you're saying, the point is still the same, that this is more about a step in the history, and a step that doesn't have inherent significance, and could have been reversible. So that being the case, what does Asara B'Teves reflect? So what it reflects, it seems, is basically a Yom HaDin, essentially. That it's a day of judgment. It's a day when there is a sakana for Klal Yisrael. And things could go in either direction. And therefore, tshuva is particularly appropriate as an effort to change the course of things. So maybe there is that fundamental distinction that the other days have an aspect of avelus to them. And therefore, the avelus takes on its own component and is also particularly incompatible with Shabbos. But they also have together with that a major focus on tshuva and the notion that today is a day when there is something particularly threatening or particularly being brought up for judgment, and therefore tshuva is called for. So it would seem that Asar B'Teves only has that element, and that there is something inherently in the day that is being highlighted by Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh that calls for a response of tshuva, and therefore that isn't something that's portable to a different day. While avelus perhaps is more portable, as we find in personal avelus, that if somebody, for example, is a levaya on Chol HaMoed, so the avelus waits until after Yom Tov is over in order to start. Avelus actually can be moved, but a day that has a certain essence to it, that has its own character, and that perhaps is not portable. Now, just to say very quickly, because we're going to have to reflect this opportunity for tshuva with mincha coming up just a few minutes, so just quickly kind of speed to the end here, but these are some of the elements that we see reflected here. It could be that all the Tanaisim have these shifting components, as maybe Shmuel you alluded to before, that the idea that there's a difference when we're in a situation of active Gezeiras HaMalchus, Rachmana Litzlan, so then maybe the Tanaisim are really in their full tokef with aspects of Avelus and Tshuva all combined. While our decision of Klal Yisrael to take them on in a voluntary form really means we're only being mesiaches to one aspect of it. And we're saying that, okay, we're not really obligated to have a full-blown fast on these days, but we recognize that there's a significance here that should be appreciated and that should be utilized as a time for tshuva. So that much we said we'll do. Okay, we're not going to have the full Yom Kippur kind of fast, but to have a day of tshuva and have fasts that will provoke us to engage in tshuva, that much we have accepted for these days. And there are additional components also, which you could read about, that darshan, that maybe there was a particular Shabbos relationship, maybe the original Asar B'Teves was Shabbos, maybe there was Chil Shabbos going on, and some farm there's a sefer you can find in the library. That was a sefer zikaron for Shlomo Kalish, I think it's called Zichron Shlomo, who was a Talmud of the Avnei Nezer, and Rabbi David Mandelbaum, who was a phenomenally prolific author and editor. So he put together the sefer in his memory, and his birthday was Asar B'Teves, so there's a whole section there of Torah on Asar B'Teves, and I think there are quotes from someone that the original Asar B'Teves was on a Shabbos, and that there was Chil Shabbos going on, and the king heard that. And that's part of what it says he was near, you know, Samach Malach Bavel Yerushalayim, but also Somech, that he relied on this, that he realized that the Jews were vulnerable because they were lax and they were deficient in their observance, and therefore there is this ongoing relationship between Shabbos and Asar B'Teves that maybe also has that aspect to it. So there's a lot more to say about this, but just the notion that we should have some appreciation and awareness of what Asar B'Teves is, and the idea that our tshuva today should be empowered and should be charged by that awareness. But also, we mentioned a few weeks ago, I think still in the Shloshim for Shlomo Fisher, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, so he was the one who put forth that suggestion that Asar B'Teves has significance on a Chumash level as well, just as Tisha B'Av and Shavasu B'Tamiz do, and that the significance in the Chumash is that his theory, so he can't prove it, but he thinks that that was the day of Mechiras Yosef. And of course, reading this parsha, the kind of the nomant of that whole story, but the notion of Mechiras Yosef, both in terms of the advancing of the plot of Jewish history, but also in terms of its significance, is the beginning of the Galus. That's what led the story, advanced the story in that direction. But also, it is the Sinas Chinam. It is the paradigmatic Averi ben Adam l'Chaveru, as we discussed a little bit in these parashios. So we are still working to be mitaking those deficiencies that exist between people that allow things like Mechiras Yosef to happen. So that being the case, there is a particular burden today that we should be sensitive to our issues ben Adam l'Chaveru, to be aware how we can fix and how we can rectify whatever is lacking in that area, and that we should be very directed to a tshuva to try to address all of these deficiencies. And through that, we should soon be zoche to restore the Beis HaMikdash, to bring about a complete redemption, and then we'll be able to fulfill the promise of the Navi Zechariah that days such as today will no longer be fast days, but will be Lebeis Yehuda, L'Sasson, L'Simcha. So I wish you a meaningful fast, a meaningful, powerful mincha right now, and that God willing, tomorrow again, I'll give you the Mekhairos. Our plan is to look at those Gemaras on Daf Rav Mudalef and to address that question.